Welcome to the Property Premier League, the weekly podcast where property meets Premier League football. I'm your host, Chris Mervin, and joining me are my co-hosts, Steve Green and Jamie Asplund. Each week, we'll dive into the world of property and football from the unique perspective of professionals who live and breathe both. As diehard fans of Spurs, Palace and Everton, we know a thing or two about the highs and lows that come with both the beautiful game and the property market. Whether it's the thrill of a last-minute goal or the challenges of a market shift, we've got the stories, insights and banter to keep you entertained. So if you're passionate about property, Premier League football or both, you're in the right place. Get ready for the weekly dose of all things property and football with the Property Premier League. Let's kick off. Hello, today we are joined by a special guest, Chris Canterbury, the founder of ProConvey. So myself and Jamie will be asking lots of questions regarding how he is changing the face of property transactions using a digital platform. Chris is a Man United fan as well. So firstly off, Chris, tell us a very brief bit about ProConvey and then go straight into why the hell you're a Manchester United fan, considering you're not from the London area. Carry on.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, Plymouth, actually. Yeah. So I'm Chris, co-founder of ProConvey. The digital platform is meant to make property transactions faster, more transparent, less stressful for everybody. And before I worked in ProConvey, I was a residential conveyancer for 10 years working at a couple of different law firms in Plymouth. So I saw firsthand, you know, the job and the frustrations that come with it. I am a Man United fan outside of work, as well as a conveyancer. So I think that's two negatives on this podcast, what I've heard so far. But I've also got two young kids and I'm just at the minute figuring out the balance between kind of work and social life.
Who do your kids support, Chris? Just putting it out there.
They're 2.5 and 3 months.
So definitely Man United.
Definitely Man United, yeah. Or maybe Argyle now. Plymouth Argyle, I'd go to see them, which I know is taboo to talk about it on the podcast.
No, we do differ. It's all football and we do differ. And we've had fans of lots of different sort of teams on here as well. But, you know, for those who won't be seeing this on video, you are wearing a Man United shirt. So you are proudly sort of representing there as well. It's good though, because it's the only time you can really wear it at the moment, isn't it, in the house?
It's the best time it's been in a while. Because you asked me to come on the podcast, it must have been about 4 weeks ago now, and yeah, I was looking at the results. It was like draw, loss, win, loss, loss. And then when you called me up the other day to say, do you want to come on now? I was like, perfect.
Yeah.
Chris, I congratulate you. You're the first guest we've had that's come in their team colours. So
really?
you're going to be called Chris Full Kit from now on. That's what I like.
Well, yeah, I didn't know if it was going to be on or not. Yeah, what, you bash Man United so much, I thought they needed representing.
Yeah, I don't.
But fair enough, yeah.
It was so easy, though, before you started winning. It was so easy. I mean, you had so many things against you, and now it's starting to take over, really, isn't it? So what, you're from Manchester, I guess, anyway, is that right?
Yeah, originally from Manchester. Yeah.
Great, okay. When did you move down?
When I was 15.
Okay, so you're long enough to have some good association and know the good times. And who were the people who actually got you into sort of Man United then, other than the fact that you're probably winning lots of things at that time?
Yeah,
just possibly follow the herd?
Absolutely. I'll leave it out there. Family. It was everyone in my family was a Red every Saturday, and you know, every game day was just Man United shirts, Man United scarves. It never was an option to support anybody else until, you know, you're a bit older, and then you can't do, right? You can't be a turncoat at that point. So yeah, I've been a supporter all of my life, and it was obviously more enjoyable than it has been at the moment. But I think we're turning a corner, hopefully. We're moving up the league. We've got some wins under our belt. It has been laughable, though, for the last 10 years, hasn't it? And I can see you, the smirks on the faces. Yeah.
No, I don't want to say that, mate, because ultimately it's from where you were to where you have been. It is a massive difference, isn't it? But you've gone through a massive transition, and obviously you've had to sort your SHIT out, really, because you've had lack of investment and all the money's gone on sort of, I guess, players to keep up to a certain level. Mm-hmm. But, you know, your training ground, your ground, and, you know, you look across to, well, For Everton with a new ground there, ourselves at Spurs with a new ground as well. No way in hell did you think 15, 20 years ago we would be ahead of you on that side of it, because you had everything and you're still the biggest, I think, income generating team in the world. So why that hasn't been put across, you know, sometimes it comes down to wage structure, obviously, and FFP's made a difference on that, of course. You can't spend it on all players.
In the last few years, right, there's been lots of players that we needed to offload. Sometimes I felt like there was six of the main 11 that we needed to get rid of because of wage bills and just underperforming. And I think it seems like we've done that now. Like, we got rid of the obvious ones being, you know, Garnacho, Sancho, Rashford. They've all left. And I think we are rebuilding. There seems to be a transition in place at the moment. I think we definitely play better. It's just the results weren't showing at the start of the season. Hopefully now they keep coming and that guy can get his hair cut.
Indeed. Indeed.
Did you watch him? Obviously, I don't know how old you are, but what sort of era was it? Because obviously that was a golden era. And I think when you say the last 10 years have been horrible, they've been, when you were winning that treble season, was it 99, 2000 or whatever it was? And you can't emulate them years. And to fall off, you probably haven't fallen off as far as you think, but you were winning things like you were. So was you there in them sort of years? Was that your era of the...
I would say so, yeah. It's been my whole life, you know. Yeah, so I was born in 1989, so...
Youngster.
I think my first game was 1996, Newcastle 2-0, we won, I think, if I remember rightly. And then since then, yeah, it really did, and, you know, it's not to sound like it was boring, but they did just win all the time, right? Everything, and you felt like you were in every competition. There was part of me, maybe a very small part, that was like, God, I wish it was a bit more unpredictable. And, you know, I kind of weirdly had this thought that it would be nice to have a team where you go and you don't know if they're going to win each week, and, you know, had a bit of jeopardy to it. But now that it's come around, I'm like, why was
everything's thinking... always available, mate, if you want that.
Well, that's why they go and support Argyle now, you know, at least, yeah.
Isn't it funny? Because that would have come across as arrogance at the time, but, you know, you do need a competition there, and that's kind of good, where even this year, where you haven't got... You could argue Arsenal are going to be a runaway leader if they continue with doing what they're doing. But I don't think so. I don't think they're playing as well as they could do. And certainly some Arsenal fans have said to me that they're just getting results. There's very few times where they're actually, wow, that was an amazing match. But they are ticking. But, you know, if you look at the league, crikey, I mean, Man United are, you know, there's quite a few teams in contention, really.
As well. And obviously, I think last season was one to forget for both of us, right?
Like, it ended okay, but... Like we said on the previous podcast.
That's it, which is not going to let you forget that year. Not going to let you forget
I've got to, you know, I don't know when we're going to win something again. I really don't.
A rad game, weren't it? That was the worst game. So to lose it is even worse. You know, I'm sure you don't care, Chris, right? Like, you got the result, yeah.
I always,
and watch that was tough, yeah.
I'm only seeing the cup. That's all I'm seeing. If you can see your reflection in it, lovely, lovely. I'm up there soon, so I'll have a little look at it and take a picture for you guys.
Jamie, I was listening to a couple of the other podcasts. You've got a season ticket now at Hill Dickinson. Still.
Yes.
Yeah, you have. Yes, you go up quite often. Do you go up to Spurs, Chris?
Yeah. We're up again on the 28th this month to watch Fulham, which is our bogey team. So my son's already said, what's the point? We're going to lose. That's at home as well. But, you know, they're not playing particularly well at the moment. That's an even kickoff, which would be good. Mm-hmm. And then I possibly might go again next year. But I'm watching them away next year against Burnley, I think, as well, which would be a good trip. So, yeah, that once or twice. Yeah, it's just too expensive, you know, membership as well. My wife and one of my sons has never been to watch a match there. They've been to the tour and that's it. And not really massive football fans, to be fair. Myself and my younger son are. So, but it is expensive, isn't it? Because ultimately, you've kind of got to go in the club shop when you're there if you don't go all the time. And nothing's cheap, is it?
Yeah, does it compare to Wembley much?
Have you not been to Spurs?
Yeah, I've not been to Spurs, no. I've been to Wembley a couple of times. Obviously, they've got escalators and it's like a food court, isn't it? More or less in there, you know. Is it similar to that?
Yeah, it's better than Wembley because Wembley is a bit concrete, if that makes sense, especially some of the back bits. No, but Spurs is the bee's knees, and I think Jay would probably say the same. There's very similarities between both of them.
I've never enjoyed the result there, but the stadium's nice. I was there, unfortunately, when one of Frank's first games in charge, and I think you beat us, was it 5-1, Chris, or 5-0 or something like that? I think you were 4-0 up at half-time. And that, apart from the goals going in and it raining, I can always remember it's the first time I saw them pints that fill from the bottom.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, and the main thing they've done there as well is that you don't feel you're being fleeced when you go and get a drink or get some food. And the food in general is pretty good quality as well. So it's definitely... So we say upskilled or up. The area is not great around White Hart Lane, to be fair, but the stadium itself is like a beacon of light. It really is. So that's good times. Okay. Should we go and have a look at the results from last weekend then? Jay, are you ready to talk about this or not?
We've never done this so fast in the podcast before in my whole time.
No, don't you worry, mate. I'll be keeping you slow and we'll go through every minute detail of what happened on that fateful day. I'm joking. It's over now. So right, Friday, we had Leeds against West Ham. I think we all said that it was going to be sort of a... Leeds were a stronger home anyway. And
I think you predicted that right, Chris. I think you said 2-1.
Yeah, I think I did. I didn't write it down, actually, but I'm going to say yes, I did predict that right, 2-1. Although I don't think I predicted many of the other games right, to be fair. But Leeds, back on it. West Ham, they look miles off it still, don't they? I kind of feel for him because he needs to invest, he needs to change it and make it his own. Bowen's the only player which, if you look at your team and compare it against that team, you'd probably only take him. Pakatar isn't the type of player who is going to get involved in a relegation battle, if you ask me. So I reckon he might be sold in January. I don't know what you guys think.
I think he wants out. And I'm only saying from looking at him, I can imagine he's a bad egg if he wants. I don't know why I think that, but by looking at him, he's quite a moody player on the pitch, a bit like, dare I say it, Richarlison. And I would imagine if he wants out and they want him potentially out, he could be quite a bad apple in there. But that, I could be totally wrong, but that's just from looking at him as a player.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think they've dropped off one of the, you know, huge drop off, isn't it, since they lost Declan Rice, really. And I think, like, we talked about it on some of the other podcasts, you've got to keep hold of them, or replace the players or keep hold of them. And now here we are, they're at 19th and we're talking about them losing more players, you know. It's, I don't know. They're always in transition, West Ham. Something's always changing, whether it's the manager, the players, the team, that, you know, yeah, it's a...
I think it's when you don't get a... it's very hard, or it used to be quite hard to get a club up to a certain level without spending money. And you needed people who actually knew they're going to lose money on it, but it was a passion behind owning the club. And the success of that has happened all the way through. So if you've got a really successful owner, you'd be able to pump loads of money in and knows it's for the love of the club rather than actually to make money, then they've been really successful. It's obviously changed now to more of a business, and the financial regulations as well have a real impact. But I don't think that setup is correct. They haven't got that investment, have they, at West Ham? And they've got a stadium which they don't really own, and it's nowhere near what the competition is now. It's difficult, isn't it? And obviously, yes, I am a Spurs fan, and West Ham aren't my favourite team. But, you know, I do feel for some of those West Ham fans, to be honest, because, you know, it's a bit like us as Spurs when we miss out on players who, because of wage structure in particular, they would have come to us, but there's a wage structure. Now we've got some new board who have apparently changing the structure and are hoping to pay more wages, which is great as long as it works out financially, but that will help us get to the next level. I don't see West Ham being able to push that way, and they're going to get players who might fit them, but it's going to be difficult if they keep on losing points. And Nuno, I feel a little bit sorry for him. They knew exactly who they were getting. It's not as if he's unproven, and he hasn't been able to do anything yet, has he?
Now, I think when you're, I don't mean it disrespectfully, but a smaller team, and they're probably classes in that element, sometimes if you lose your better players, like watching Kudos on Sunday, he's the one that had people on the edge of the seat. Like you just mentioned there about Declan Rice, you lose them players and don't replace them with something of that quality. Your team can be so fragile, but built around 4 or 5 players. And if you lose 2 or 3 of them and you don't replace it, it's hard. It is hard.
Yeah, and it's hard to replace him like for like, Declan Rice as well, right? You know, like he just does so much around then. Like you said, especially if you're in the centre of the pitch and everyone's around you connecting with you, you lose that. It really changes the way how you play, right? The whole team structure.
Definitely. It's hard to get someone straight in, isn't it? Up and running of a similar quality, because ultimately they're going to be playing for better teams. It's hard to get them in. And the only ones who seem to be able to do it, probably the teams which, you know, a Brighton or something like that, even a Bournemouth, where they've got reasonable recruitment and can fit it and know exactly the type of player. But they're not selling clubs in the sense that they need to sell them, but they are, aren't they? They do them for profit and will sell that. And they bring the same sort of player in who hopefully will be the same sort of quality. So it's a difficult time for West Ham. I do fear for them. And Leeds, well, you know, they may be absolutely fine, won't they? I think we'll see.
I think you've still got to find a couple of, let's say, for example, Wolves and West Ham don't improve. Yeah. You're still going to have another 2 or 3 in that bottom section. Unfortunately, it could be us, it could be Burnley, it could be Brentford still, it could be Leeds, it could be Forest, it could be any of them. So I think there's still, I don't think anyone's, that league is so tight at the moment. I don't think anyone is what I would call as safe yet.
Yeah, and I think it's also the same for the top of the table. The January transfer window is usually one of the ones where you avoid because everybody's overpriced, but I think a lot of clubs have to go and spend in this transfer window.
If they can afford to with the PSR, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, or loans, etc. as well. I know, obviously, I've muted it quite a lot regards to Ivan Toney needing to get back to try and get something into the England squad, if he can
desperate. I'm desperate for him. I am desperate, desperate for him.
Yeah, you're a big England fan, aren't you? And they have Harry Kane. There's nobody below him, is there? There's nobody coming that you would trust to go on that pitch after him. So,
Ollie Watkins.
But he's a form player as well, isn't he, I guess? But I'm not sure he's the top quality, but he's done some good things in England shirt. So, you know, people do raise their levels, don't they? Saturday, we had Chelsea against Sunderland. Chelsea at home, Sunderland back on it, back on form. Yeah, 2-1. Crikey.
It was ground it out as well. I watched that game. I don't know why, but I watched that game and they ground it out. And it gives me the fear going there on Monday. It's they've definitely ground that out, to be honest.
It's always one of the teams that come up that just at the start of the season just defy expectations and start winning all of their games. And what are they now?
It's where they are after Christmas, though, isn't it? Like you say, we used to say that bubble, the bauble burst at Christmas. I can remember, you boys might remember as well, but when Hull came up and they had, was it Jorginho, Robinho, his name was, and they were banging in goals and beat Arsenal, I think, did they 2-1 or something like that with a screamer, and that bubble didn't burst and they stayed up another season. But yeah, it's when you after Christmas, isn't it, where it happened.
Yeah, and then the next season, then they're in the relegation battle again, and you just think, like, what happened? You know, it's that new season bounce.
People get used to how to play you and what to play against you, basically.
They do, and there's a lot of teams like that currently, I think. Newcastle at home against Fulham, Newcastle winning 2-1. And Newcastle, they're just a good, they work for each other, they're a good team. And obviously, midweek we had Spurs and Newcastle, and they showed a good team spirit. Newcastle, I think they're a good team, especially at home. Fulham not going through a great run at the moment.
Fair play. I play to Newcastle well because I think Isaac leaving, everyone was like, oh my God, they're losing this centre forward and this, that, and the other. And to this moment, as we sit here now, he hasn't performed for Liverpool. Forget my dislikes, we say, for Liverpool, but he hasn't performed. And I'm sure there's a player that will come good at some stage. He's definitely not going to. He's going to come good. They've got good players around him who will. But for them to go in and get, I can't pronounce his name, but you know, the big, tall, blonde-haired lad that Newcastle have signed.
Voldemort, that's him.
Yeah, that's
him. The guy off the movies.
Yeah. But fair play to him, because I thought you're being forced to pay a lot of money because the club know that you've got a lot of money for Isaac. But he's come in and seems good with his feet, not just in the air and doing the job, to be honest. So, yeah. Fair play.
Yeah, he's a handful.
Yeah, they're and I saw you guys mentioning on a couple of the podcasts about, you know, being the richest club in the world and not being able to utilize it now. It must be really frustrating, right, when they're underneath all the teams who have committed the same thing. I think that's maybe got its own podcast though.
Yeah. Eddie Howe though is a good manager. He is a good manager. He knows what he's doing. He will adapt and change, and he's had to because obviously you've got a different type of striker there now as well. Jacob Ramsey's a good player, to be fair. Yeah, Isaac just used to run off the shoulders and in behind. Yeah, Gordon's a good player still there. So they've got a lot of plus points, haven't they, really? You're shaking your head about Gordon.
With Isaac, do you think it's one of them, like when you're at Newcastle, you're playing off the shoulder of the defender rather than in amongst them because you're pushing teams back a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think sometimes you can be a big fish in a small pond and it just goes your way. Do you know what I mean? I thought with him having probably someone like Alanga that's so fast supplying the balls into him, and you've got Bruno Guimaraes, or his name is, he's everywhere supplying it. I'm guessing Isaac found it fairly easy to score goals last year with what he had around him, like you say, and the counter-attacking football, running in behind off the shoulder, not pinning people back in and trying to play that probably the way that Liverpool do is an interesting one, to be honest.
Yeah, well, let's go on to Liverpool next, and then we'll leave Man United to last, obviously. Brentford at home against Liverpool. Brentford winning 3-2. Liverpool's problems are still quite evident, aren't they? I was listening to a podcast this morning, and they were talking about Liverpool and Arne Slot, and if he's been a failure so far, and you know, obviously he hasn't. he's come into a situation, especially this year, where they've got rid of Trent, they've got rid of Diaz. Obviously, Diego Jota, that's had a massive impact, not just as a player being lost, because he's a very good squad player in particular, but then in the dressing room, that must have a major effect. You've got Van Dijk, who, and Konate, but Van Dijk in particular has just dropped off, in my opinion. Konate is one of the, you know, one of the matches, I think a couple of weeks ago, he was just running behind the player, didn't even attempt to tackle him, or just...
That's one of the goals.
It's shocking. Players been playing beneath themselves, like Kirkez. He hasn't found the heights where he was with Bournemouth, but maybe that's what happens when you go move to a bigger club. It's easy to do with little clubs, isn't it? And obviously the Isaac thing. So it's going to be a strange time for Liverpool, certainly. But yeah, Brentford under Keith Andrews, ticking. Don't mind them at all. What do you guys think about Brentford's? Do you think they'll be okay? They've won the match, and then they've tended to lose a match afterwards usually, but that consistency needs to be there. But
I honestly thought they'd be dead and buried, and I said that this probably the very first podcast. But fair play to Keith Andrews and what he's done there, because they've lost a lot of quality in Bouma, obviously the manager to Spurs. But yeah, they seem to a bit like a Bournemouth, I suppose, keep rejuvenating themselves from being reborn, don't they? And they keep coming back and back. Don't get me wrong, I think it's going to help some teams, not the bottom three or even the one above that, but I think it's going to help some teams this year with maybe how bad some other teams are, which you can, but that's not a negative against them. It's yeah, they're doing, they've gone above my expectations anyway.
Yeah. What was the word you were going to use, Jamie?
I can't remember. Exceeded my expectations, I think.
Great.
Yeah, that's what's great.
And then we've got Man United, obviously, we leave the last match. Man United against Brighton Hove, 4-2 to Man United at home. Chris, you're well in a position to give a better, hopefully, match report than myself on it. How was the match? And
Yeah, I think Brighton have been a bit of a bogey team. Well, I don't even think you can call them a bogey team anymore. We're in amongst that level, aren't we? Mid-table. But they've been beating us at Old Trafford, beating us away. They're a tough team, aren't they? A really good team, actually, Brighton. So to win 4-2 and keep that momentum going at the moment was really huge, I think. You know, it's definitely put a spring in my step these last three matches. You know, I don't know what you guys think. It does definitely give you a bit of a bounce when your team win, right? So I've not felt this for a while, but...
Jay wouldn't know.
I think, yeah, scoring, you know, some great goals. Kuna got his first goal, and it was a cracker as well. And Casemiro's there. I think we just looked solid. You know, the result was one thing, but it has been, like you said about Arsenal earlier, they're just grinding out results. I think our last three performances were worthy of the wins, which hasn't been for God knows how many years, really, not months. You know, it's felt like we were always just lucky when we were winning before. And but three solid performances here, yeah. It was good. Did you guys watch it or the highlights?
I did, yeah. Nothing to do with the score, but a really interesting one for me. Do you know when Danny Welbeck scored that free kick?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a free kick to start with, but if it is a free kick, I think that's a red card.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think it's a free kick because I agree with what they said. He's overspilled the ball. Mm-hmm. So whatever happens after that is irrelevant. So yes, he got caught. He was looking for it. He got caught. He got a yellow card for that. I just think that's a really strange one. If it's a, I think it's a nothing. I don't think there's a card or a free kick in there because he'd overspilled the ball to the keeper. But to stop it, give a free kick and then a yellow card, it should be a red card. So it's a strange one for me why that. There's been some, I don't want to talk about it, but some strange refereeing things still going on at the moment.
Yeah, it's inconsistencies, isn't it? I think it's as well when the VAR comes in, you wonder if they should bring that up and get him to have a look, right? But yeah, I think it was just because the ball got away, wasn't it? Definitely a goal-scoring opportunity. Didn't look like he was going to get there, but I hear you, yeah.
Keep out his hands by the time he fell over.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It had to be well back. You knew he was going to take it and he's going to score because it's what he does.
I don't watched the game, Chris Mervyn, but they... Yes. Obviously, you're both Chris's. But they talk about Danny Welbeck getting an England squad. I was like, wow. Is that how bad, not how bad we are, but we've got, you mentioned it earlier about who's in behind Harry Kane. They talked about Danny Welbeck going to the World Cup.
Problem is, if you're English-based in the Premier League, what was it, low 20s, maybe 25, 26% of players are English who play in the Premier League, like properly play in the first teams. So we are bereft of quality coming through, aren't we? Shocking.
Dominic Calvert-Lewin will make it at this rate.
Well, no, mate, we won't be that desperate. So a good result for Man U, definite. And like we said, I think they are starting to find something. And, you know, that produces belief, doesn't it, behind the squad. And he definitely looks like a type of person who would be able to energise a squad which is already believing that they can win. So I think that he's a good person for that. He doesn't look at negatives, he looks at the positives. And funny what Sean Dyche was saying, well, what he said previously before he was employed with his current club, purely because he was said, well, he'd probably win more if he was 4-4-2. Well, that's not Amorim, and he stuck to his principles, hasn't he? I also think he hasn't stuck to his principles in the way that, to his detriment, as Ange did. Although I do think that if it was any other club, he probably would have been gone, because Man United couldn't get rid of him because they've made too many mistakes.
Well, that's interesting, because we got Forest tomorrow.
I know.
Leeds.
Forest as well.
Forest, yeah.
That'll be a good match.
That's a tougher game for you. We'll do next week's games coming up, but that's a tougher game going there than it is them coming to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think it was the first episode of the podcast, Chris, you were saying you were worried about Big Ange already. That was the first episode, yeah. So, yeah, it can come full circle, right?
Obviously. I've lived it, mate. I've lived it.
Yeah.
Sorry, mate. Okay, so Sunday we had quite a few matches. First match we had was Arsenal versus Palace. I'll tell you what, Palace are a good team. I knew that anyway, but they are a good team to watch. They each know their positions, and, you know, I think they had opportunities in that match as well, if I remember rightly. But Arsenal winning 1-0. I know they're top of the league. When I look at teams who are above my team, I always look at the players and who would get into each team. For instance, in the Arsenal team, who of my players in Spurs would I put into that team? And I think there's probably it's difficult, isn't it? I would always say Van de Ven, but he's quality and kudos, but is he better than Saka? No. So he's on the bench. So yeah, difficult times, isn't it? And Arsenal are playing well. They're a good team, and they've taken over. The only team which I could see which has better players on paper are Man City.
Mm-hmm. I can see, though, you can see from, we said before that game, if Arsenal beat Palace, that's a statement. That is a statement for what's coming, and they've gone and done it, and we can't take that away from them with the other results around them, especially if we haven't got there yet, but City losing to Villa.
Well, let's talk about it now. City went to Villa, lost 1-0, and yeah, I think some of the players need to look at themselves, don't they, a little bit for Man City, because they've dropped off. They really have. The intensity doesn't be there. It's like someone who's actually, I'm gonna really try and run this 10K and sub 40. And then when they try really hard, everyone they're trying really hard. And once they make it, they're like, oh yeah, I've done it now. So I'll just run my next race, and I don't really care. I'll just run it just to do the distance. And that's what it kind of feels like. I love all those players.
There was any teams, I don't know if there has, maybe United and the 90s Liverpool a bit earlier, but a team that has dominated the league as much as Man City did. I feel like they made winning 5-0 just feel normal, which no team ever did. You know, they would just win 3-5, 4-0 every single game, right? And then so to have some kind of drop-off is understandable, but I don't think at the minute there's any teams in that league that are like that. You know, there's not really... Arsenal seem to be the dominant one right now, but we're only 9 games into the season.
Yeah, but it's a World Cup year.
They're not dominant on scores either. They're not dominant. They're not running away with games, Arsenal aren't.
No. Man City were fantastic, weren't they? It was unfortunate. And so, on Saturday, or was it? Yeah, this weekend, United won and City and Liverpool lost. It was, doesn't happen. I enjoyed that.
Well, if you think about it, for someone like Phil Foden to not be in the England squad for the World Cup, that is a possibility. That is crazy, because I rate that player. I really do. But if you're not on it, you're not on it. And that's what happens, isn't it, with careers and ups and downs. And you have
to.
He'll
still go, though? Is like Foden just definitely on the plane?
No.
Or do you not think?
I don't think so, mate. I think we've got a lot of. You look at his midfield in particular, without going too much into England, look at midfield in particular, but you've got some players there from teams which. Okay, they've done one or two, but you've got players like, your Villas, your Newcastles. There's lots of players who now, and Crystal Palace, who we would never put in the England squad usually, because it's always dominated by the bigger teams. But there's some really good players in our midfield. Is congested, isn't it? There's some good quality in midfield. You know, you could even argue that until recently, there were some big names who weren't going to make it. Big names. So
I think as well, I would imagine he's the sort of manager where you don't know if you're definitely in that squad, whereas you used to have favourites. I would imagine he will pick at the right time what he thinks is best. And I, like Chris just said, apart from his favourite, Harry Kane, and probably England's number one, I'm joking, they're probably not guaranteed anything, which will make for a better England team, hopefully, that you're there on merit, not on because he thinks you think you should be. So yeah, it'd be interesting.
Well, obviously I'm biased, but Harry Kane is miles ahead of any other striker we've got currently on a world level, in my opinion. And you could argue that it's Germany's an easy league, but the consistency, and we just talked about it with Foden, has always been there, even if he's been in a team which we've flattered to deceive at Spurs when he's been in the team, and he's obviously pushed us through. But that kind of quality really breeds throughout the team as well, because worst case scenario, you go one goal, two go down, you've got a player who can make something out of it. And we haven't got anybody like that. And England haven't really got that currently. Bellingham, yes, he started playing a little bit better, but, three matches ago, he was definitely not going to be involved. Well, unlike.
I think the thing with Harry Kane, you said that it's an easier league, so of course he's going to score more goals. But I think that just proves he is elite, because no one else is putting up their numbers, right? He's gone there and just smashed all the records, just showing that, I am the best in the league, and he could easily still do it over here.
Right? Mate, his problem is he's underrated. He's underrated by England fans anyway, in general. He's underrated by FIFA. If you look at the Ballon d'Or in particular, Lewandowski might come third or something originally when he was hitting all his goals in for Bayern. Yes, there are probably a Champions League away for him to get up there, but I don't know what number he came, but it was way down. He's way down in the Ballon d'Or. I'm not saying he's the best player in the world and should win it, by the way, but I'm just saying, compared to other years, he is way down. Right, let's move on. Bournemouth won at home against Forest 2-0. Obviously, highs and lows for Forest. They won previously and lost to Bournemouth at home. Always going to be a really hard place to go to. Really compact stadium, small amount of crowd, really vociferous. Again, I've used that word. And that'll be his tenure, don't you, Jay? It's going to be winning, drawing, and then there'll be the odd loss in there.
Yeah, he's never, and I said it last week, he's never good at Bournemouth. I don't know why. We all talk about bogey teams, I'd imagine. Dyche's bogey team is probably Bournemouth, believe it or not, wherever he's managed. But for other Chris, he will be at them this week. Forest for Man United on Saturday will not be an easy, he will come back fighting from that for definite. And going to City Ground as well, that'd be interesting. Good game that I'd like to watch that if I could.
Yeah, definite.
Good game to watch.
And then we had Burnley winning away at Wolves, and Wolves...
Did you see it afterwards? Yeah. Tasty. Manager nearly in with he was in with the crowd pretty much, and Sarr, the keeper, was falling out with someone after the game. Tasty.
I think that's unravelling, isn't it? It's unravelling.
It seemed to go two goals down, though, as we talk about midweek games. Go two goals down, then they seem to all of a sudden just start battering people. They had City at one stage. I think they were 2-0 down there, and then it got back to... I know they won in the end or whoever it was. But yeah, it's a crazy Chelsea, maybe. It was a crazy, crazy game that they go two down and then they come back fighting.
Burnley are well-structured. They're a well-structured team. Parker knows what he's doing in regards to setting a team up. It's just that difference in quality sometimes, which doesn't help. I mean, for them to score three goals, they are one-goal merchants, aren't they, really, Burnley? Shows how frail the Wolverhampton team is currently, and it's not a good time to be a Wolves fan, I guess, unfortunately. Anyway, let's put that by the by and talk about the match of the weekend. Everton at home. I'm going to let you speak to first, Jay. Everton at home against Spurs. Spurs visited. Obviously, we're better on our travels than we are at home anyway. Over to you, Jay. Give me a match report and your Everton side of view.
Here's my honest thing. I watched the team warming up and I thought where the Tottenham warm-up was right in front of where I sit, three rows from the front, I thought, they don't look big. There's a few missing here. We're in with a chance. I just generally thought we're in with a chance. The whole way through the game, I never felt threatened by Tottenham. And that's not a negative. And I'll be honest with you, that's not a negative. And I've never driven back from a game after being stuck in the car park for an hour and 20 minutes thinking, how the hell have we lost that 3-0? That was the worst result we've had in a long while, as in score-wise. And fair play to Tottenham, because they didn't feel like they were threatening us and they won 3-0. So that's not a negative to Tottenham. That's a credit to them, to be fair, to come away, do that. Was there any standout players?
Van de Ven.
Paulinho, I thought he was good. Van de Ven in our box was good. There was others. Kudos didn't get into his groove on that. To Brennan Johnson, if I'm being completely honest, I liked him. Didn't even know he's playing the first half. But yeah, what a result for Tottenham, because I've never been to a game and thought I'd feel less threatened, and we've lost 3-0. So fair play to him.
Well, look, I think that we had possession in patches. We didn't do anything with it. We are toothless, like I've said before in this podcast. We lack the end result, end ball, and we certainly haven't got a striker. I mean, who's going to do anything? You know, whoever plays up front, they're the nearly person now, the nearly man. They're nearly reaching that ball that was sent across. There were some balls sent into the box, but they weren't accurate enough. If you're playing Johnson, it's always a difficult one, because I just don't, as I said before, I don't rate him as a top winger. And yeah, set pieces, realistically, wasn't it? Which undid you. And I think, you know, you should have scored one or two anyway. And in fact, the goal which was ruled off for blocking, etc. It was a weak one. He was offside blocking the keeper, but he was never going to get to it anyway. But that was a shame that didn't go in. It'd been good for us, but it would have been good to see if that was allowed. To see where we would have gone.
I've not always been confidential about your keeper, and probably I would put him down there. He's probably one of the worst people I've ever come to see come in for a cross, but his shot stopping on Sunday was very good. Yep. Very, very good.
Yep.
So I'm not most confidential about him, because he's been bullied by Everton before when we drew 2-2. Him under the ball and coming for crosses, I've never seen a Premier League team before in their warm-up, because Jai, my lad, he loves going to watch the warm-ups. They set up, they do corner routines, defensive and free kick defensive drills in a warm-up, and it's because your poor keeper doesn't like coming for the ball. He looks very shaky, but put him in that one-on-one with a shot to stop, good, very yeah. good.
I'd back him one-on-one against other keepers. He's up there 100%. He is, and his position is good, but his reflexes are fantastic, especially low shots. He saved us a lot of goals. A lot of stuff has been on target. But yeah, coming for crossing, doesn't command anything. Overthinks sometimes, takes an extra touch at his feet as well, which is frustrating. But yeah, he has been arguably one of our savers in some matches where we should have let goals in, definitely. But anyway, 3-0, good result, but that's us. And then we go and do what we did in the midweek, but you know, we're not talking about that. We'll move on. Right, let's go and talk a bit about Pro Convey, Chris, if that's all right. Tell us about what exactly it is for people who haven't heard of it before. Obviously, I know you because you're from my area, and I've had the benefit and pleasure of seeing you talk about Pro Convey as well. Talk to us about what exactly it is, who it's for, how it's changing, and the way things are done in regards to the moving process, and what your future plans are as well, I guess.
Okay, yeah, I'll take you just a bit about what we do at the moment. So when I was a conveyancer, you have that initial start of a transaction where you're getting form signed, TA forms, you know, things come up, planning, that would all come up later on once the sale pack's ready. We intend to get everything ready from the moment a seller walks through an estate agent. So similar to kind of the HIPS packs. Now, I know you guys have mentioned them a lot. Back in the day, it didn't work. For various reasons, the tech wasn't there. There was massive pushback, you know, lots of other reasons, and it was mandated, which is another one, you know. So what we've done is essentially built that tool for the modern day. So it's for everyone, really. It's for the client, it benefits the estate agent, it benefits the lawyer, and it reduces transaction times. So what will you get inside of that pack really is your seller fully onboarded, which is including the ID, source of funds, TA forms, upfront inquiries, planning, all of that stuff. You get the EPC and the data to market the property if needed from third party providers, and your land registry plans. You get your material information and your local authority environmental and search packs. And all of that is just ready on day one. So essentially an agent, as soon as someone walks into an agent, you can ask them, the client, hey, do you want to market your property? Do you want to go digital sale ready? If you do, you're going to be fully ready and you can market it as that, so that when a buyer is found, we've already got all the information, everything's ready. The onus is now on the buyer's solicitors. So, and there's obviously not just one single fix. Right. Yes. Sorry, Chris.
Chris, what is it? Is it purely for solicitors then, or is it estate agents as well? Can the estate agents use it? Estate agents
as well. Yes. Yeah. So yeah, there's an estate agent similar portal which refers the work through to the solicitors as well. So you're not only getting yourself ready as an agent with that client, you're essentially instructing a solicitor day one as well and getting all of that stuff ready.
Nice.
So we're trying to put the power really back into the agent's hands to say, look, you're always moaning about your conveyances being slow and taking time to do things. You now have the power to get this transaction ready. And all you have to do is put in the details you would necessarily put in to do a quote anyway. So you're not doing anything extra. And it just front loads all of that information. So yeah, it cuts off transaction times down the lane. And we've got the data to back that up as well. Yeah, Jamie, hi.
So obviously I've never met it before, Chris. It's been nice to meet you today. But what is the cost that you charge the client at the point of instruction for this?
So we work on firm by firm basis, really. It does depend. So you would be charged, there's two kind of products, really. There's a one that doesn't include as much, and then the one that has the full digital sale, and they range anywhere between 150 to 399, depending on how much it costs. But the one that's 399 includes the search pack, which the buyers will reimburse you for anyway, so it's not costing you anything.
Yeah.
It also includes an insurance policy in there, and that insurance policy says if the buyer refuses to reimburse you, we will reimburse you. So there's no real risk.
So if they're a lender, for example, so we're not using them searches because they've come from a third party, you'll reimburse them anyway.
We reimburse them anyway, yeah.
My only point was thinking there from an agent's point of view, was just thinking of myself there. That's great because I love the idea of it and I really do genuinely think what a great idea. But I think they're the people that don't transact, as in either don't go on to sell or exchange contracts. Is there what is it going to cost them? What does it cost you as a company as well, really? So, because I appreciate not everybody goes on to, unfortunately, exchange and complete.
Yeah, I don't know the margins exactly, but I do know that we are trying to work with the insurance company on that exact thing. So once we finish this initial pilot, this initial stage with LMS, which I'll talk about in a moment, we are just trying to look at the figures and the data and then trying to get insurance on that as well. So at the minute, it is only if the buyer solicitor refuses the searches or the buyer, but we are looking at could they be reimbursed if it falls through, or you know, if there's a genuine reason. But I think the insurance companies are worried that, you know, the same as you guys, they're just going to pull out, say there's a reason and there isn't, right? Yeah.
So Chris, what, you know, so it's pre stuff basically. So if I take it the AML is just done once on there and the agent can use it and the solicitor can use it. Is that right? Fantastic.
Yeah,
brilliant. I love that. I hate this. As you would have heard in other podcasts, I hate duplication. And so I guess that realistically, if there's a solicitor which an estate agent who are both using ProConvey and you would refer to them anyway, you could package it up almost as a pre sort of part of your offering, I guess, as well.
Yeah, and I think that's where what we need to do at the minute. We need to educate the estate agents on the benefits of this for everybody and the clients, as well as the piece around would they pay up front for this. And I know you, Jamie, and you and Steve were mentioning about upfront costs for marketing and stuff, and I agree with you. Maybe £300-400 is a lot if it's just for the marketing, but if you do include, you know, the ID checks, the searches and everything else to get themselves ready, you are then going to find out who's serious as well. So not only have you got a serious client, you've got one that's completely ready. So yeah, it's
I think with solicitors in particular, if you've mentioned a solicitor involved, people do expect to pay something up front anyway. So it might be a good way of doing that. So I'd be really interested to see how that evolves with estate agents and forward-thinking estate agents, actually, who actually see it as an opportunity rather than, okay, that's something for solicitors, which it won't be solely. It should hopefully speed up the process all the way through.
I love the idea of finding out if there's a problem before you even get to a problem, if that makes sense. Because there will generally be people that go, I didn't know my title wasn't right. I didn't know my house wasn't registered properly in 1999. I didn't know all these things. They come out, like you say, Chris, towards the end. It's quite nice to find out this don't quite look right, or this isn't quite right, or this has happened. And it's good to be able to hire them out early doors. So especially when it gets towards the end and it's the nitty gritty that you haven't got someone going, we're ready to exchange. Oh, no, we haven't got the ID for our client certified. You're like, all right.
Yeah, and it's the same. The same as auction as well, I guess. Really, if you find out it's an issue there and then, regardless, you've got your ID, it's all already done. You could actually need to tailor it into your agency agreement, etc., as well, and get it done at the same time. But if there is something flagged where you know this is going to be a problem, all the information you've got already can be easily, well, is used for the same auction process anyway. And some of the searches will go into the auction pack anyway. So it seems a really good, straightforward way of doing it. It makes total sense, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think the fact is that because the system takes care of it, the conveyancer doesn't have to actually do anything. They're just getting referred the work, you know. So the kind of benefit for them is that they're just receiving completely sorted, verified cases with IDA, MLT, MA forms, material, all of it ready, gives them time to have a look through it before it actually gets sent over, frees up their staff members that are normally doing the admin to do the legal work. So although it seems like a huge benefit to the conveyancers, it will help the chain. There's a lot of dead time in the chain, as you guys know, where things are just you know being sorted out. And as well, I've heard on the podcast you mentioned how many issues there are with conveyancing. There are, there's various parts of it that. But you know, there is no silver bullet. But what you can do is at least get everything ready as soon as possible, so that, you know, it will speed up the transactions. Because conveyancers, I don't think they are all, well, they're not all slow. You know, I've done it. I've been there. They're just completely overloaded. They're since 2016, 2020. Sorry, they're on average conveyancers now handling twice as many cases as they did, and there's obviously more regulation around the source of funds and absolutely everything. And all of a sudden, clients now want 24/7 updates. So they're really just pushed to their absolute limit to keep these transactions moving. And you can't control the slowest conveyancer, obviously, but you can control how quick your client is ready. And then you're then in control and dictating that timeline a little bit more than if you're just waiting around yourselves as well, you know. So it's just trying to give a benefit to every party in the transaction and, yeah, speed up the transactions eventually. It's a good start.
Good. And you mentioned about LMS as well. Can you just explain to people who don't usually come across LMS, etc., what it is and how it fits into what you guys are doing as well?
Certainly. Did you know about LMS, Jamie? I was interested. Yeah, you did. Okay. So we've done a few roundtables with agents, and it's usually about 50-50. Some of them have never heard of them, but obviously they're very well known in...
We've dealt with them on the corporate sales, basically LMS. So I've dealt with them over the years with not quite what Chris does on auctions, but the in-between bits, unfortunately, with repossessions and so on and so forth.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so LMS, Legal Marketing Services, one of the most recognised names in UK conveyancing. They essentially have the infrastructure to provide lenders, law firms and other technology platforms onto one single system, which sounds a bit abstract, so I'll dig into that a little bit more in a minute. But they sit behind most of the lender panels. So it's, yeah, they deal with, I think, about 95% of transactions they say they touch in one sense or another. So what they're doing, or what they've started now is, I guess since COVID, there was a real boom in digital conveyancing tools. So there was lots of separate conveyancing tools for each part of the transaction. So, you know, we do the beginning part, there's another startup doing SDLT, there's another one doing this, you know, so you get all of these tools, but no real way of them working together. It's just a fragmented industry. So what LMS are doing, and there's going to be a few acronyms here, are starting the NPTN, which is the National Property Transaction Network, which essentially aims to bring every part of the transaction process from a person walking into an estate agent to the transaction being completed into one connected ecosystem. So that will be the NPTN. And doesn't matter which system you use, it will all be on the NPTN, so it can be tracked on that one system. So they are starting that. It's been split up into, I think, 8 parts, the whole transaction of a property sale, and we do number one really well. So we're coming in to connect to the NPTN on that initial stage of the transaction, getting people ready, and then other providers will come in eventually. But LMS did a pilot last year with a lesser tool than ProConvey around upfront information. They did 2,500 transactions through this pilot. And even with the slow conveyances and just with everyone else in the chain using it their normal way, they cut down transaction times by 3 weeks, and they had 40% fewer fall-throughs just because the seller was ready. Everything's already been looked through. You know, the buyer's not got any kind of mistakes. And they sold quicker as well, because you could say, you know, my seller's completely ready here. It's digital sale ready. So there was no real, you know, no real downside to it. The issue with LMS was it was just a pilot, so it wasn't as connected as our system is. So we've come in luckily, well, not luckily, but you know what it's like in business. You're just in the right place at the right time, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely fantastic product that isn't being used nationally yet, just locally, but the LMS integrating into their system is going to really open us up to essentially start to tell the country about, there's this issue with upfront information, we've got a system that can just get it all perfectly ready for you, and there's these added benefits. So that's how we're working with LMS. We're using their marketing power, you know, to get around to the masses.
Fantastic. And how do you see the future then? Obviously, you've got that growth there, and it's really about getting the message out to estate agents in particular, and solicitors, obviously, to get on there and form it. Because obviously, a lot of estate agents will work with set solicitors they've trusted, they've used all the way through their time as an agent as well. I guess it's really just joining the dots up, isn't it?
I think it's one of them where we've got it where you can work with the people you work with. We're not a panel. We're not a panel. You know, we let you just create your own panel and refer work through and stuff like that. But you can also just have it where you download it and send it to the solicitor next door. We make sure we've covered that. But obviously the way it works, we're hoping will be either the way we do it is you can invite other law firms or agents. So Jamie, if you were on and you're referring through to a law firm and you get chatting to another law firm, you can say, oh, I'll just invite you. It only takes them about 20 minutes to get set up. Now they can not only receive referrals from you, they can receive fully onboarded clients, you know, for the sake of 20 minutes. So it's just trying to, as you said, Chris, it's a bit chicken and egg. We need some law firms, we need some agents to refer through to them, and we're just balancing that out at the minute, you know, just trying to get them on. But I think with the national infrastructure of LMS, we hopefully should scale a bit quicker.
Are you finding any kickback from like your traditional conveyancer in the market town? Are they like, nah, I don't want that? Or are they all being pretty on board with what you're asking of them?
Being pretty on board. I think we do so much that there's usually a period where we have to sit with them and actually tell them how this is going to work in their flow, because conveyancers typically have, as I just said about the digital tools, there's quote calculators, other onboarding portals, ID checks, SDLT, land registry. So there's lots of different tabs open for them. So when we go in and say, hey, you know, like, we're going to put this all in one box for you, we are the all-in-one conveyancing platform, it is a bit of educational work with them just to say, okay, so you can let that go. When does that contract end? You know, because I need to wait for that. So it's usually, they can always see the benefit of it. It's just trying to fit it into their workflow, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And how do people find a bit more information about it, mate? Is there's obviously your website there as well, contact you direct.
Go to our website, www.proconvey.co.uk. There is a page for each of the kind of solutions we've got, which is auction, conveyancers, agents, clients, you know, so it just tells you a little bit about them. And there's a video as well. It's only 8 minutes, which just runs you through kind of how it works. So that's easier for easier to see than coming on a demo, obviously.
It makes total sense in my eyes, especially with, remember when I was an estate agent, and also there's a I'm now thinking about a few things with regards to auction, which is obviously what I do now as well, how I could hopefully push to use you guys, because it makes total sense. But I think obviously as soon as the government mentioned about, you obviously had an episode about it, about the speeding up the process and all these things they were going to do, it's obvious, well, there's already that solution, it's already there, it's just not implemented, using yourself or something similar, etc. But it sounds like you guys are leading the way in that side of it in particular, and forward thinking agents, realistically, who value the relationships they have with good clients, they will see it as a real positive, no doubt.
Yeah, I think it's, we were talking about this 5 years ago, the upfront information and stuff. And there was a time when at the beginning, we thought it may become regulation for estate agents to have to do all of this. And then it kind of went away and stuff. But we still just kept believing in that. You can't solve it all, but there surely is no downside to just getting everything ready up front. And people really like to kick it away like it's not going to solve anything, but it just has to, right? Like, even if it cuts out little time saves at the beginning, it will affect the chain. So it's just trying to educate people. There is the solution out there already. We've got people using it. We've got local agents referring through to lawyers who've just essentially got rid of their whole onboarding team. You know, the system is just taking care of it. And then on top of that, because I was worried about just throwing out a piece of software and just saying, use that, it'll do everything you want, we have a help bot there as well. And it's not AI, it's a team we've got here that will just sit with you and get you to the end as well. So you're not just chucked on the platform. We will jump on with you, take off them. I don't know, Jamie, have you ever had it where a client comes to you to fill in the TA forms because they don't know what they're doing? Yeah, so we also take that off your hands as well. We're not just a software platform. We are a service that gets people ready for their transactions, make sure it's got everything that they'd need, really, you know.
I actually think delays, we spoke about that as well, but I think the delays that come with the conveyancing process are actually the start that make it as long as it is, not actually the ending of it. The ending of it are the ones that are in your, you've got a sales progressor, you do sales progression yourself. They're the ones that are in the forefront of your mind at all times because they're ringing twice, three times a day. It's the ones at the start that haven't realised they've got to pay an upfront fee to get started, £49 to get started or whatever it may be. The ones that haven't realised they've got to click download to download their initial documents and get these things sorted. So I actually think you're bang on the money with something speeding up the start to make the end quicker.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's about also not making it more like trying to give the client so... If they do pay the £400, it needs to look good and feel good as well. And we spent a lot of time making it look modern and actually that you're getting your money's worth, making it simple. Because if we are providing the customer service, we need to be confident that the software is picking up most of it and there aren't any issues, you know, because that's a huge cost to us as a software company. But no, everyone just gets through it really simply. I think we had a one of our clients said that a 73-year-old client of his did it on his iPhone. So it's really, really simple. It's not, you know, it's not over the top. It's just getting you ready. And the reason for that is there's really kind of three prongs. There's the stuff the conveyancer needs to get ready. There's the stuff you guys need to get ready and the stuff the client needs to get ready. Well, we've got that one system, which just does all three of them. So you've all got everything you need from day one. You know, that's really how it should be.
Not sure I can ask this, but are clients paying you up front or they're paying you on completion?
So we have 2 weeks. So the law firms that are doing the onboarding with, let's say, no referral and are just using the software, they just pay us on a monthly basis. The DSR packs, we allow the agents to choose, do you want to charge for this? And then you can make a markup if you want. You know, you can have this solution and sell it for what you want. Or if you don't want to take the money on account and deal with the invoicing, when you do kick off a case, you can just make the client pay for it. And their very first task will just be to make payment. So nothing would happen until they do that. So again, Jamie, if you did have a client, they said yeah, and then they never really log in and do it, then they're probably not that serious, right? You know.
I think the thing with it is that when people talk about withdrawal fees and things like that, it's not the agent wanting to make money. It's the agent wanting to make sure that person is going to be committed to the sale, because that's the whole job, right? Isn't that, Jay? So...
No,
something like this.
What you've put into it. And yeah. I know it's not nice, but go, so what have you done for your £150, £200, £300 or whatever it is? But actually, that still doesn't cover the cost of what it costs you to go out and market that house. Nowhere near that, to be fair. Mm-hmm. So as much as they feel that they're paying for something they haven't got, i.e. they haven't completed on it, it's still the withdrawal fee doesn't cost what it costs you to market a house these days.
This something like this, where you're getting an actual product and having something which helps the process of you actually selling your property, makes total sense as a estate agent to go out there. They're committed. I've got the property at the right price. The vendors are really nice. They're using the pre-market digital pack, or whatever you decide to call it, and using our solicitors as well, which we know are bang on because they use ProConvey and all these other systems. So what a fantastic opportunity. Well done, Chris.
And the thing as well is the client doesn't move this time, but they move in a year's time or 6 months' time down the line. They can obviously go back to ProConvey and say, I'm probably, something bad happened or someone passed away or this happened or that happened. But they'll be there, hopefully on the way to getting it quicker next time as well. And obviously they've already got documents.
Your
email
lasts
already.
The last 12 months anyway, doesn't it? If it's done through this way anyway.
Our services as well will refresh after 6 months for, I think, about £3, you know, which we just
took
the cost of. So it's not that much to actually, once you bought the searches to update the information, doesn't really cost.
Once you're on with them, I'm not going to dare say you've got client for life, but you've got on there along the way for as long as they can till you actually get the transaction to go through, aren't you?
Yeah, and then the good thing, you asked about the future. The good thing is, in the future, if that property goes on the market again, like, their data is there now. You know, I don't know how it'll be used yet, but the data is there. You know, we know the inquiries that were raised on the last transaction and we know what came up. So perhaps in the future, that can also be used to make sure we're not going over the same issues on the next sale. But one other thing I think is definitely where we're heading. We've obviously got all of the information now at the start of a transaction. We want to use, and there's a company, I'm sure they won't mind me saying their name, Orbital Witness, and essentially they would scan all of that documentation and present you a nice little report on that property as well, so that you're also flagged of the issues as well. So you get that report. So now you and the conveyancer, because I know you guys have said as well, the conveyancer is just like a robot in the background. They don't really get involved in it, but if you're all aware of what's happening right from the beginning, you can make a plan, you know, stick to it. And there's no 5 weeks down the line finding out, well, no one told me about that, you know. So that's the plan, really, to get as much information up front as possible. then run it through some AI tool, not to do the conveyancing, just to provide, you know, flag any issues that we can see. And then in the very late future, the seller solicitor could even look through that, sort out the issues before a buyer is found. Maybe that's an extra fee, I don't know, but similar to how it's done in Scotland and other countries, you know, you kind of just get everything ready up front.
Wouldn't it be great to actually have that information on file, like the land registry is supposed to do digitally on every property? Yeah. It's a history of what's happened previously, where a person who's interested in a property just can pay a nominal fee just to access that for their solicitor, for them to have a quick breeze over. Actually, you know what, that was sorted out. Actually, there was an indemnity on that section. Maybe we need to look into that a bit further, because that was a point of view rather than done properly, if that makes sense. So yeah, what a great tool. Well done, mate. Well done. Okay, Chris, say once again your website.
www.proconvey.co.uk.
fantastic, great. Okay, let's go over the matches for this weekend quickly, if we can do. Just give our sort of indication on who's going to win and who's going to lose. So first match we have is Brighton against Leeds. That'll be tomorrow. Leeds away. I can see them still getting something out of that. I think it probably do a draw.
2-1 Brighton home win.
I think it's going to be 1-1.
I agree. If it was at Leeds, it'd be a draw, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to go Brighton as well, actually. No, I think Jamie is right. Yeah, I'm going to say 2-0 Brighton.
Well, there's a first time for everything. Burnley against Arsenal. Burnley at home, Arsenal away. Tricky for Arsenal. That Burnley are a team who remain compact and they need to be broken down, but
2-0 Arsenal.
Yeah,
I think
no problem. Yeah. No problem. I think you are right. It's going to be 2-0 or 2-1 to Arsenal.
Fair enough. Yeah, I agree with that.
Palace at home against Brentford. Interesting. Palace. It's got to be
2-1 Palace.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to go. I'm agreeing with you today, Jay. I really am. 2-1 Palace. I think you're right there as well.
That's the returning Chris. We've been in the air somewhere now, so we'll give him a little big up there.
Yeah, nice one, Steve. So Fulham against Wolves. Fulham at home. Wolves probably need to get a result from that. Both teams not performing particularly well at the moment, as we know.
Big
Fulham
game for someone to put a statement on it, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
It is.
A win could turn that season around for one of them. But if I was edging something, I'd edge that Fulham were probably the ones that will get it. I don't know. Draw?
I think war draw.
I think 1-0 to Fulham.
Yeah.
I think I do.
I'll go 1-0.
Okay.
It's different.
Nice. And then we've got the match, which is really interesting. Forest at home against Man U. Chris first. Confident in your recent success. How much?
Yeah,
2-0. Jay, what do you think? Forest are better at home, aren't they? Well, they will be.
I'm going to go for, because we've got Chris as a guest, I'll go for a score draw, 2-2.
Okay.
But what did you really think? 2-1? Silence is golden.
I think Forest are going to, I think them at home will be, it'll be a tougher game for United than probably the results of recent will make it look like, to be fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fair enough. I think it's going to be 2-2 as well, I think. That's definitely a point there, definitely. Spurs have got a match, tricky home match against Chelsea. Only in recent seasons we've beat them once or twice, and usually
Chris,
we lose to Chelsea.
What are you thinking? What do you actually honestly think there? I think you're going to do it. I think you'll beat them.
I think everything paves the way to... I mean, Chelsea aren't... They're a bit like us. They've been flattering to deceive a little bit in sections and getting a few results when they shouldn't do. And they've been playing poor teams with youngsters and getting some good results. But obviously youngsters don't play with the same monkey on your back, if that's the right phrase, sometimes when you're playing. We are at home. The supporters are backing Frank. There's only a minority who think he's useless, but you always get that with most fan bases, to be fair. It'd be interesting to see how Simons plays, because obviously heavy linked to Chelsea beforehand. I was messaging one of my brothers today, and he's a Spurs fan, obviously. And he was, he looks a bit like, he's a Mark II of a weak player. We had a winger, I can't remember his name now, to be fair, but he just, it's not strong enough. He needs to be a lot stronger. He is not up to the pace yet of strength yet.
you're exactly right there. When he played on Sunday, it was like he was always like, oh God, what are you doing here? Like he couldn't get used to, you get the ball, then someone bang on you in the Premier League. It looked like when you give him a bit of time, he seemed to be able to glide. But if he just needed that settling moment, and teams in the Premier League don't let you settle. I thought he was poor. So
yeah, he was.
Yeah.
He needs space to run into directly in front of him. He's not great holding the ball up. If you look at someone like Kudos, he is a beast. It's very hard to get the ball off him, and he's tenacious as well, win it back. Simmons hasn't got that. He's not the type of player to do that, to be fair, because he's got Bentancur and whoever behind him as well. But it's a difficult one, that match. But I do think that we could do something, because Chelsea aren't the team which they have been over recent years. They're still trying to find their feet. And obviously, it's a little bit of me wanting us to win, of course, as well. I'm biased. But I think we could do a 2-1. 2-1.
Oh. I think 2-1.
2-1.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think you'll win.
Nice.
So you don't know what you're going to get, though.
That's a very long-winded way of me saying 2-1.
There's some good analogy there, mate. I'm not against it.
Thanks, mate. I read it this morning. Just remembered it. Liverpool against Villa. So Liverpool at home. Villa found some form recently.
Easy that, mate, isn't it? 3-1 Villa. Easy.
You reckon?
That'd be some week, right, to beat City and then Liverpool straight afterwards.
3-1 Villa.
Liverpool are playing, aren't they playing City and Real Madrid next? So they kind of need to get a result on that to make it. So that would be interesting.
It's written in the stars about Danny Carvajal has got injured for Real Madrid somehow. And Trent's obviously been getting not a real like good run of games. His first run of games is going to be back at Anfield. Wowzers.
Okay. I think that will be a 2-2 draw.
Yeah.
That's what I feel. I think both teams have got will push it a little bit because they want to get the win.
What are you going for over, Chris?
I think Liverpool are going to win. Yeah, I do.
That was really hard for him to say.
It's just they got to come good eventually, right? I don't think they've been playing. No. All right.
Sunday we have West Ham against Newcastle. So West Ham at home against Newcastle United. Good run of form for Newcastle.
I'm going to surprise you now. I'm going to go for a draw, 1-1 draw.
Well, West Ham need to get something. They really do. There's people walking out on 50 minutes because they're just, not happy with the way. I don't think they're having a go at, well, I listened to somebody the other day, and they won't have a go at Nuno. They were having a go at the board, as in not backing them.
When I came to Everton, they were singing, I won't say it on here because we may have some younger listeners, but it was about the board getting out, but you can add some other different words in between that.
They were locked in a room, mate, and the door was jammed on the other side. That was all. It was just a cry for help. But yeah, I think that it'll be West Ham, Newcastle 1, maybe. 1-1. 1-1. And then we have Manchester City at home against Bournemouth. City, again, needs to get a result, and Bournemouth aren't a pushover. And obviously, Semenyo is having the season of his life. Going to be sold for £150 million at the end of the season and then never have a season like it.
I'm going to use one of your favourite terms, Chris.
Go.
A goal in it.
There's a goal in it, mate.
2-1. I'm not sure which way, but I'm going to go 2-1.
Well,
could be a draw.
I think it's going to be City 2-1.
City 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
And then on Monday, rounding off the week, we have a really tricky match for Everton away to Sunderland. That is
and
tough.
I'm going.
And you're going. Go on then. What's your
first day back to school for Jai.
Are you going for a Sunderland win? It's hard not to see them winning by the odd goal.
Obviously, Everton fan would say draw. So anything else outside that, I can see us going there and winning that.
Yeah.
If they put on us what you put on us, Chris, with the corners, we're in absolute turmoil. Throw-ins and corners. If they do what Spurs did to us, we'll be in a right mess.
I think it's going to be Sunderland 2-1, or possibly it might be a 1-1.
Shake your hand now. That's a long way to go. It's not actually too bad for me because you get a train from up to Newcastle and then across on the metro, but it's still not pretty to. But Everton on the road is not an easy one to go, to be fair. So, optimism would say draw. That's me being optimistic. I don't think you're wrong with your first comment that
really? We
could get a schooling in how to play football in a particular way.
Chris, what do you reckon?
I think Everton are a better team than Sunderland. Like on paper, though.
Do I think that?
Yeah.
On paper, but there's lots of teams on paper who are better than other teams. But the way they're playing at the moment, Sunderland just seem to be a bit more about it, especially in the midfield. And yeah, it's they just seem a bit more together team, don't they, currently? They're firing. I think whereas
Everton have got to make changes to what happened at Spurs.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah. So well, what?
Yeah, I'll go Everton win 1-0, I think.
Chris, you can come on again, mate. You can come on again.
Yeah.
That's all
forgiven said. What you said about Liverpool. You can come back again now, Chris.
Yeah. Well, I've wore the United shirt, so you know where my allegiances lie. But yeah.
Well, guys, thanks so much for coming on, Chris. It's been really good having you and finding out about all about Pro Convey as well. That's the full time on today's podcast. Thanks for listening to the Property Premier League. I've been your host, Chris Mervin, ably assisted by Jamie Aspland, and today's guest, Chris Canterbury. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. Thank you, Jamie.
Pleased to meet you, Chris. Really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
We'll be back next week with more insights and debates from the world of property and the beautiful game. They think it's all over. Yeah, you know the rest.